Welcome, everybody. Welcome to Roller Out the Barrel, the vintage baseball podcast that talks to vintage baseball players from all over the place, from all the different clubs, from all the different states. We're covering everybody. I'm not quitting until I've interviewed every single player. That ain't true. What I have on the phone right now is a name a lot of people know, but haven't met in this area. Some have, some haven't. I've never met him, but I know him. And that's why we're doing this podcast. It's Matt Stone. Matt, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Barrel Roller. How's things going out there?
Oh, we're just welcoming spring out here. You guys welcome spring in like November out there, right?
I guess we could call it spring, fall. Yeah, that's about right.
You guys miss winter. You don't know what it's like.
I have no earthly idea what snow is anymore. I haven't seen it in years.
When's the last time you saw snow? How many years?
Oh, man. Let's see. I moved out of Pennsylvania in 2016. But it was in September 2016, so probably very early that year, like January or February. So it's been like 3-4 years, something like that.
So
and
you,
it's been a great 3-4 years.
Are you talking overall, or are we just talking about weather still? Because, yeah.
Just weather. We can talk about other stuff too, but the weather, you know, it's been 75 and sunny for the past 3 months. Love it.
Would you ever move back to an area that has the snow?
Yes, I would.
Oh, okay.
I would absolutely. Because one thing that we don't have here is seasons. We have a hot, dry season and a cool, mild, rainy season. And I really do miss the falling of the leaves and, you know, the spring. And I actually do miss a little bit of winter. I just don't like it when winter runs for many months, you know?
Oh, absolutely. So Matthew Brandywine Stone, finally, answers are going to happen. We're going to find out some information. I know it sounds like there's some important questions coming, but there's not.
He had me going.
Let's start where I always start and I always will start. I want to know when baseball came into your life at the earliest, you're playing it, your fandom of it, where it led to, and we're going to work all the way up to today.
Whoa, goodness. This could be a long talk then.
Let's do it.
Actually, it probably won't because if I think back way back, the earliest I can remember ever having anything to do with baseball was maybe watching like ESPN SportsCenter, like back in, the mid-90s when the Braves were kind of killing it. And I kind of remember that, you know, maybe I could be a Braves fan. But it turned out that I never became one. And then I never really paid much attention to baseball again for, I don't know, like 10, 15 years. Can you believe it?
Wow.
The next time that I became involved in baseball in any way whatsoever was in 2015, 2014, when I started playing vintage baseball. I have a kind of an atypical story when it comes to that. For me, it was mostly about appreciating the history of the game. And so I was like looking for an opportunity to understand it and appreciate it in a little bit of a different way. And I found that opportunity when somebody says, hey, you ever heard of this vintage baseball thing? So that's when I actually started playing, was when I was, I guess I was 33. Never, ever had played any sort of baseball up until then. So it's been a little bit of a different trajectory for me than maybe some of your other guests.
Yeah. You don't got a lot there.
Yeah. Growing up, I was living in upstate New York, and I think that most people up there were supposed to be Yankees fans or Mets fans, and I just really didn't want to get, you know, in the middle of all that, because it seemed like everybody had very strong feelings about one team or another, and I just didn't. So I just didn't even bother. And then it all just kind of washed through, and I didn't really pay any attention to it until I moved away. I got out of that town.
And did you go from New York to Pennsylvania?
Oh, there were quite a few hits on the way.
Wow.
New York? Oh, yeah. I'm kind of a mutt. So I was in New York, grew up there, and then I moved to Alaska for just one semester of college. I thought, man, I got to get out of this town. This town sucks. And then I did. So I went to Alaska, and I had a good time. But turns out I'm kind of a mama's boy, so I could not stand being away from my family. So for my second semester and through the first, I don't know, year and a half of college, I went back to my hometown to stay with my family. And then my entire family, we all decided to move to South Carolina. When we went there, we went to like upstate South Carolina, which is, I don't know, what's the big city up there? Maybe, I guess, Greenville is kind of the bigger city. I was in this town called Anderson. And finished out college there. And then after that, I found myself in, like, right on the Mississippi-Louisiana border. And I was going to the University of Southern Mississippi for a graduate program. And I got a master's degree there. It's also where I met my wife. And she ended up getting this postdoc in Pennsylvania. So that's how we ended up in Pennsylvania. So quite a few stops along the way, but yeah, eventually I did. I went New York to Pennsylvania.
Is Pennsylvania? And, I'm sorry, go ahead. No, go ahead.
And then we covered the rest of the country by moving out to California a few years back.
Was Pennsylvania the first state you came upon vintage baseball?
Yes.
And so go ahead.
Yeah, I heard about that in 2014, I guess, is probably when I heard about that. And, man, sign me up right away. That just sounds cool. But when I was living in South Carolina, you know, I actually looked it up a little bit after the fact, you know, does this stuff exist in South Carolina or Mississippi or Louisiana? And I couldn't find any evidence that anything serious was going on in any of those places. I think I saw that there was maybe one or two teams in South Carolina, but there didn't seem to be too much of a organization where that one or two teams could play against anybody.
Right.
But yes, Pennsylvania is where I came upon it.
Well, that's what you came across when you moved out to California, is you had to not make one team. You made four teams.
Yeah.
Because you had to have somebody to play.
Kind of a thing. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So when we ended up out here, you know, the greatest thing about vintage baseball in my mind isn't even the baseball. It's not even the history. It's, you know, making new friends and getting to be a part of that community. And so when I had to leave that community back in 2016, I thought, damn, I'm gonna have to try to come up with something like that where I'm moving. And, you know, I looked around and there is this group that plays vintage baseball down in the Bay, the San Francisco Bay Area. But they don't play the same game as what I'm used to, right? I became enamored with the 1864 rules, which we can talk about in depth whenever. But these guys play 1886 ball. And as you may recall, I never played before. Right. So to see a ball whiz by me while I'm in the batter's box doing like 65, 70 miles an hour, that would just scare the hell out of me. So I chose not to bother with that. And instead, I just started putting together this program for Central Valley, and we ended up with four teams, just so that we could have somebody to play against.
When you're starting, it's not a league or an association in the title, but it's the Central Valley Vintage Baseball, but it is an association basically.
Essentially, yeah. We don't necessarily have any sort of a championship that we strive for. And when I was setting it up and, you know, as people were coming on and helping out, I think we all understood pretty well that, you know, it wasn't going to be a super competitive kind of an ambiance to be out there, at least not at the beginning. You know, we wanted to just get people on the field with different personalities, different backgrounds, you know, just try to find a way to give people this chance to play baseball again, because most of these people probably haven't played in, you know, decades, some of them. So it's been very nice to create that opportunity for everybody.
And but the 1864 rules are probably the way to start something like that. And whether it goes, whether that changes in the future or not, I would think, in my humble opinion, 64 is a good place to start. Don't you think?
Yeah, I do think, you know, the nice, I mean, because you get a little bit of, the reason I chose it is because you get two things that you wouldn't get in any other year. One is you get the bound rule, right? Everybody likes the bound rule, you know, especially if you're a novice, you've never heard of this and you're playing without gloves, that bound rule really helps draw people in. And then the other thing is you get called balls, which kind of speeds up the game a little bit, right? Before that, we didn't have called balls, but after that, we didn't have the bound rule. So that's the exact year I chose specifically for those two rules. And not only is it really good for a novice coming into play, but I think it's really good for somebody to just kind of walk by and say, what the hell are they doing? And what they'll do is sit and ask questions. Why are you playing without gloves? And before they know it, 90 minutes passes by and the game's over with. It's nice to be able to complete a full game in, you know, an hour and a half to 2 hours rather than, you know, 3.5 hours for like a fast pitch thing where everybody's calling their pitches and all that stuff.
Well,
so I think
also,
that the 1864 game really helps with that.
It also cuts down on injuries.
Oh, absolutely.
And
absolutely. Didn't really work perfectly this past year. I think we had a couple of injuries. Felt really, really bad. I think somebody messed up their ankle really bad. And I know that there were a couple of like maybe broken fingers, dislocated fingers. Somebody hurt their shoulder. It was a little bit of a rough year, but I don't know. Out of however many people we have on those four teams, I think we had like four injuries. So I don't know. I don't know what's acceptable, but I guess that's okay for now.
Oh, sure.
If we all get better, hopefully there'll be fewer and fewer injuries.
Hey, going back to Pennsylvania, what club were you on in Pennsylvania?
Oh, I was with the Brandywine, hence my name. So, well, let me talk about my nickname real quick.
Sure.
I sort of had an evolution of my nickname. And it started when, you know, I heard about the Brandywine when this guy named Matt Bartnicki reached out to me. I'm assuming that's the name that most people have at least heard of. It's Black Bart. He plays with the Diamond State Baseball Club in Delaware. And he said, you know, the Brandywine's looking for some players. You want to come play? Because I'd reached out to some other team, but their roster is full. So I said, yeah. And so I went and I tried out or just played, you know, with the Brandywine and practice, whatever you might call it. I think we all knew that I was a complete novice, didn't know what I was doing. And it was fine. It worked out all right. I was a person to put in the right field. That was pretty much where all the newbies go. So that's where I went. And one of the things I had to do was fill out their form, their little application. You know, hey, you're going to play with the Brandywine and, you know, don't sue us for injuries and all that kind of stuff. And one of the things was what's your nickname? And it didn't really have an option to say, I don't have a nickname. So I had to come up with something. So what I chose was Crescent. And the reason I chose Crescent was because I had pretty strong feelings about New Orleans. I really love that city. And it's called the Crescent City. So that's why I wrote down. And then, I don't know, it just didn't stick. No, nobody ever ended up calling me that, but that was maybe weird. I don't know. Maybe they wanted to call me Big Easy or whatever. Nah, that didn't stick either. And, somebody else had heard that I lived in South Carolina for a while. So they ended up starting to call me Carolina. So that was my nickname. And that was more or less my official nickname with the Brandywine Club. So you fast forward a year and a half, I have to move away and I end up in California and I'm starting to kind of think about putting together this, Central Valley, whatever I was going to call it at that time, vintage baseball. And I just started kind of just reaching out through social media and talking to people about what I wanted to do. And every time I mentioned the Brandywine, I spoke so highly of it and so much of it that eventually people just started calling me that. And I thought, well, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and just own it. It's a nice little homage to a team that I really miss and respect. And, you know, it's a group of guys I'm looking forward to playing against again someday, maybe even playing with. So that was the team that I started with. So that's my nickname, and that's the team I started with. I think that answers both questions.
It does. I've always wondered. I knew there was some affiliation between the Brandywine Club name and your moniker, yeah. And now I know. So end of the interview. That's all I wanted.
Another thing about the Brandywine, though, is just the region. If anybody ever has an opportunity to go down to southeast Pennsylvania, you know, just take an afternoon to just kind of drive around the Brandywine Valley. It's beautiful. There's so much history. I really, really recommend it, especially if you go there in, like, I don't know, mid-fall, early fall. Jeez, it's so nice there.
So how many games in a season were you playing when you were part of Brandywine?
We played pretty much every weekend for, probably about 5 months maybe. So 5, 10, 20. I kind of feel like the number ended up being close to 40 games because we'd always do doubleheaders. And, most bang for your buck. If you're going to be traveling, you know, might as well get a couple of games in. So,
sure.
Yeah, we would put in some pretty long days.
And then you you go into California, you start up the CVVBA, or NOI, CVVB, and you start it with four clubs, so you have somebody to play. I'm assuming, and you can tell me right now, you probably had a hard time getting the numbers for that.
We're still having a hard time getting those numbers, Matt. It's been that is by far the hardest thing to do is put people on the field. It's such a hard sell when you tell people that you're going to dress up in a goofy outfit and try to catch these baseballs without gloves. It's a hard sell, especially for, you know, if you don't have anything to show to anybody. You know, I didn't have any product at all. Like, I couldn't say, you know, let's go and watch the Frankenmuth team.
Sure.
Or, you know, let's go watch them because you're 2,000 miles away. You know, I just couldn't do it. So, I think we're starting to finally actually develop kind of a core group of people who are willing to not only be on the field, but are also willing to help with recruitment. There's one guy in particular, we call him sort of our recruitment liaison. He's extremely outgoing and, you know, he's been very helpful. But yes, putting together the teams has been a challenge. And we're still very much in the process. So all of your listeners out here in California, come play vintage baseball with us. We're in the Sacramento area.
I believe I have more listeners in Germany than I do California.
Damn it. All right. German people.
Oh, that's probably not true.
In Sacramento, come playing.
That's probably not true. I had the captain of the Silver Stars on here. So,
oh, that's right. Yeah, Blackjack. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I probably do have a couple of California listeners.
Right on.
So that's,
they're probably already playing, though. So California listeners who are also playing, please help us recruit more players.
Well, recruitment, it's hard. It's hard. Everybody suffers from it at one time or another. I'm really jealous of those clubs that get a solid 15 and they don't have to worry about it all season. I don't know what that feels like. I remember.
I don't either. And I was really jealous. You know, I was hearing the Ohio Village Muffins. You know, you had the two people on the other week. And I was like, my God, it must be so nice to just kind of, you know, send out an email. You get 30 responses more or less right away. And you take the first 15 or 12 or whatever. That's a nice deal.
Yeah. I remember
that's a lot of people to manage.
When I started on Bay City. It was like the first year or two, when we had a home game, we didn't travel that well, but we certainly traveled it well enough to have enough guys. So we travel with 10 or 11, plenty.
Uh-huh.
Our home games, we'd have 18 guys, you know, 17, 18 guys.
Right.
And you're like, oh my God, I'm going to get two at bats today.
Yeah.
But
those are the sorts of days where, you know, I mean, I'm at home, so I don't really drive that much. Those are the days that I don't mind just kind of, you know, you guys can go play. I'll just sit here and drink some beer.
Oh, yeah. I wish, you know, in those days, I wish I would have just sat down and said, you know, yeah, I had just started, though, so I wanted to play.
Oh, yeah, I get that. These days, though, for me, I don't know. It's just, I can take it, you know, if I am needed on the field, I am very happy to play. I love playing. But if I'm not and somebody needs me to, I don't know, go around with a donation hat, I'm fine with doing that. Or if somebody needs for me to just kind of walk around the crowd and talk about what's going on, I'm fine with that. If they want me to just go away and you know, sit down and shut up and drink beer, that's fine too. Or if I need to be umpire, I actually really like doing that.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
You know, I kind of try to take on as many roles as I possibly can, but I think that the best role is as player. I like playing. I love playing catcher, especially when you're playing 1864 and, you know, people are stealing, you know, like it's really interesting because I learned pretty early on that I need a hell of a lot more shoulder strength to get the ball down to second base than I currently did. So I've been kind of working on that over the off season. So if there's anybody on the California group that's listening, I'm going to get you this year.
So you guys,
steal second.
So you guys out there, you're doing unlimited stealing, right?
Oh yeah. That's the way that I was trained back in Pennsylvania. And, so I've just been kind of carrying that same mentality out here.
Yeah. Because it's a big to do around here about how we don't, And we kind of hide our less skilled players at catcher. Guess what position I play? And it's a lot different when you got unlimited and you got to put somebody, you're losing somebody out in the field because you have to have somebody behind there that can handle the position adequately.
Yeah.
And so we're always arguing with ourselves about which is the best, which is the most historically accurate, blah, 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 blah.
Well, the best part about it is that if you do that job really well, like you're praised. And if you do it kind of poorly, it doesn't really matter that much. Like, you know, if I catch a foul tip, everybody's so excited because then they don't have to do anything in the outfield if it gets hit.
Oh.
But if I miss it, then they're like, oh, darn it. Now, well, okay, I get to play the next at bat or whatever.
So do you find...
So it's actually a whole lot of fun.
So you guys do unlimited stealing and your game times are still winding up around hour and a half, hour 45?
Yeah. We have crazy high scores, man. I don't know what you guys typically end up with, but we very consistently have things in the double digits.
Yeah. I mean, the 1867 teams are the ones that go into the 30s and 40s. Around.
Oh, man.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
We often get up that high. Because of the bound rule, I mean, people get, you know, kind of get taken out.
Yeah.
Perhaps a little bit more readily than just on the fly.
Yeah, as Rudy Frias calls it, the great equalizer.
The great equalizer. That's right. He knows.
you gotta do a lot more strategy in a bound match than you do a fly match, which, you know, yep. I like all of it. I don't care. I'm just glad to be playing baseball. But one of the things that draws me to the bound of the 64 is there's more strategy involved.
I agree. I don't know if there's more, but there's definitely a different strategy. I mean, because you have to be willing to accept the fact that the ball is going to bounce. And whether or not it's going to bounce where you think it's going to bounce, that's entirely up to a lot of variables that you don't have control over. And, you know, if you're playing in deep center and you think it's coming into you and it's in kind of like mushy ground, it's not going to bounce. Or if it's particularly hard ground, you know, and it's a little pitted, then who knows where it's going to bounce to. And that's a lot of thinking that you have to do in a very short period of time if you don't think you're going to catch up to the ball, then where do you think it's going to bounce to? It's an interesting set of circumstances to play out in your mind in a very short period of time.
Well, in 67, if you're a masher, you're going to be successful.
Yeah.
And if you play in a 64 game, you're going to be frustrated.
That is very true. We say all the time, yeah, that would have been a hit in any other century. But oftentimes people do get pretty frustrated. We have this one guy who can nail it out to left center, but everybody else has kind of figured that out, and they'll just kind of wait for it, let it bounce and grab it. So he gets a little annoyed by that.
But, you know, as long as Reynolds are playing baseball, does it really matter?
That's right. That's why I always think, you know, the thing about vintage baseball is, like, even on your worst day, the worst possible day, you know, you're still out on the field enjoying the day outside with a bunch of your buddies. You know, that's the best part.
It just really is.
To be outside hanging out.
You could be at home. I always say I could be at home doing yard work because that's what I'd be having to do.
Right. But instead, just like who was it? It was Cougar, wasn't it? He said, you know, we're family people for, you know, most of the week, most every week. But, you know, every once in a while, you get to go be a ball player. And I just love that, man. That was just perfect. You know, and I think that you had said that was kind of your inspiration for doing this podcast to begin with. And man, you ought to nail it, because that truly is what I feel is the real heart of the game. You be a ball player and you just go hang out with your buddies and just have a great day. It's just wonderful.
And you make more buddies. Like
absolutely.
The funny thing is you treat and are treated like everybody's your friend and even the other team. And, it's great because I feel like in this day and age, everyone's just trying to tear everybody down. It's our natural instinct as human beings right now is to take pleasure in tearing people down, and other people's failures seem to be enjoyable to some extent for a lot of people.
Yeah, that's a sad way of life. It's a sad way of thinking, but I, you know, maybe that is true. I don't know. I got off of social media a while ago, so I don't really expose myself to all that too much. So, you know, I think that's why I got off, because everybody was getting so angry and mad about things. And like you said, you know, being excited about failures of other people. And I thought, well, I don't need this.
Yeah. I think it's people just want to be mad, as opposed to actually being mad.
Isn't that weird?
I don't understand.
To me, that's weird. I don't get it.
Because you get that feeling when you're on the baseball field with the other club, and you don't want, if you really fall in love with the vintage game, you don't want that feeling to leave. So then
absolutely,
you take that into your home life and your family life. And those are the kind of people you want to surround yourself with. And I think that is the hidden gem of vintage baseball. It's not that we're showing respect to the 1864 rules of vintage baseball, even though that's what we're doing. It's
You know, Matt, if you and I were standing right next to each other, both holding a beer, I'd want to toast you, because you were right on with that. Absolutely.
And we just have to find a way to get that message out, because I think that really not too many people that come into vintage baseball leave it. It's important to them, because you don't get this in any other aspect of your life generally.
And wow, that's a pretty big onus to put on us, Barrel Roller. Are we the vintage ballists of America, the ones that are going to bring harmony and peace to the rest of the country? Maybe.
I think our mindset could. I don't think it would be vintage baseballers, but I think our mindset is infectious.
I agree.
And so we just got to find a way to get out there and get those numbers up on all those clubs and stuff like that. But hey, enough about
absolutely
that.
Absolutely.
Tell me.
Okay.
Let's go back to the Central Valley. What are the four clubs playing in it this year?
Oh, we have three clubs that we have carried over from last year. We have the Olita Baseball Club of Davisville, and I think that's the one that I'm kind of a part of because I live in that town. The Sacramento Baseball Club, the Athletic Baseball Club of Woodland, and then this new one, the Solano Silver Star Club. That's taking place of this other club that we had that just wasn't really working. It was a small market, and we weren't really getting enough recruitment at all. Basically, the entire team was one family, so we wanted to expand it a little bit. And I think that this is not me. Like, this is now the new leadership, and I'm very excited about what they've been up to. I'm glad that they've made this change so that they can try to draw in a new group of people with bigger markets. So those are the four clubs. And it's nice because we're pretty much all, well, I guess our home fields are all generally within about, I don't know, maybe 40 minutes of each other, something like that.
What kind of problems did you have coming up with history out there? Because they weren't playing baseball in the 1860s in California, right?
Yes, they were. Absolutely. So here's a nice little history lesson for you, friend. Yeah.
Give it to
the,
me.
The earliest known ball game, all right, this is ball, not necessarily baseball, was in 1846 during the Mexican-American War. Somebody had indicated that they were playing something that appeared to be very similar to what we know as now, I guess, as vintage or 19th century baseball. That was down in, way down south, kind of near L.A., Santa Monica. But there is no evidence whatsoever that was actually baseball. Now, the myth is that Alexander Cartwright himself brought baseball to this region, right where I live, in 1849, because he was a gold rusher. And that sounds like a really cool myth. And in fact, that's where I started my research. Turns out it's all bogus, but it's still a cool story. So I kind of kept looking into it. And I found evidence, I think it was 1852 or 53, there were some people from New York that were playing and teaching people in San Francisco the New York ball game. So we know for sure that the New York rules were here as early as 1852, 53, whatever it was. There was that newspaper clipping, very small clipping. I have evidence of some sort of baseball being played in 1857 at the Jerome Davis Ranch, which is what ended up becoming the city of Davis, where I live, and was the basis for the Olita Baseball Club of Davisville. And the Sacramento Baseball Club is the first official actual club of the state. I think they date to 1859. Well, I think that they were established in 59. They may have played their first game late that year or early the next year. So, yes, we definitely do have evidence of baseball in this area as early as the 1850s.
So, well, that's – I was way off on that. But like I said, I am no historian. So the Solano Silver Stars, was there anything that John was able to latch on to that?
I honestly don't know for sure.
I'm sure.
I've been kind of away from the administrative component of all this over the last, few months. So I don't know entirely, everything that they've done. But I do know that there was a club called the Silver Star Baseball Club. But I honestly don't know what research they did, but I do know that there was a club that existed with that name. But when it started, it could have been 1869. It could have been 1850. I don't know.
Well, I probably asked him in the episode when I interviewed him. So you can actually go. I love when I can say this. You can go in the archives and you can go back and listen. to Blackjack, the captain of the Solano Silver Stars Baseball Club. It's episode 10. That's only like 5 ago. It wasn't that long ago.
Well, everybody go look at that episode. listen to that, and then also listen to every other episode
twice
because they're great.
Subscribe, yeah. Then cancel, and then resubscribe, and leave positive comments and like some stuff. It doesn't really matter.
Absolutely. Rate and review. That's what they always say on podcasts. Rate and review.
It's true, but
I listen to a lot of podcasts.
They're trying to, yeah, I do too. They're trying to be successful at it. And I just want this to be something for the vintage baseball community. It's, you know, I'm not looking for it to be anything other than that.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. Hey, give me some of your favorite on the field memories that you've had.
On the field, the one that stands out to me right now. There are a couple. Can I give you a couple?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, one of them, like just a general game, like the entire game. I didn't really have a whole lot to do with, but we were playing at Fort DuPont, which was in, I believe, the Delaware Bay on the Delaware River, and we were playing against Diamond State Baseball Club. I already mentioned them once earlier today. And it was so cool because it's on an island, you know, and Fort DuPont, I don't really know the history of it, but apparently it's kind of important because it was a fort right in the middle of Delaware Bay or Delaware River. And so it was just really cool, like the just existing at that spot and playing baseball as it was played during the Civil War. It's so cool. And, you know, I don't know how they got permission to do that, but I'm so glad they did, and I'm so glad that I got invited. So that's one as a, like, just a full game, but an on-the-field moment that I'll never forget is the first BBVA conference that I went to. It was in Menominee, Wisconsin a couple years ago, and damn, I had never played in the snow before. Actually, this goes back to the snow question. This is the last time I saw snow. So the VBBA conference in Menominee, I believe it was in 2017, maybe 2016, I don't remember. But I was standing at bat, and remember that I play 1864 rules, right? So they're called balls. So I was assuming that a ball would be called or a strike would be called. But it seems like if you don't swing in 1859, 1860, then there's really no ball, right? I guess. And I didn't realize that. So I was swinging, but I could not feel the ends of my limbs. Like, I had no idea where my fingers were. And so I actually struck out. First time ever playing 1860 rules baseball, and I struck out. And that was a little embarrassing. I was the only person that did that. But it was one of those sort of learning moments. Oh, these guys are calling balls. So the next several times I went up, it was a much better result because not only did I hit the ball, but nobody could catch it off of any sort of a bounce because it would just bury itself in the snow. And also the ball was white to begin with. It wasn't by the end. So nobody had any idea where the thing went. And it was pretty easy to find first base, more or less, you know, because by the time I got there, they had only just found the ball that was buried in 3 inches of snow. So I would say that those are a couple of my favorite on-the-field memories. And then the other one might be just pretty much any game that we did at the Mohican Baseball Club of Kennett Square. They still have, an awesome field. Everybody talks about the Field of Dreams. This is kind of an equivalent. Like, it is literally in a cornfield. Somehow they got permission to cut down a couple acres so that they could have their own field, and it is amazing. I loved playing there.
Do you have any you actually sound like you played at some really cool places. Do you have any good off the field memories? I'm sure that you do.
Yeah, I mean, there's tons of them. You know, like, the one that, because I kind of thought about this because I knew you'd ask it. There are a couple that come up to mind. One is the phone call I had with the professor, Gary Shipacassi from BBBA. The first time that I reached out to him and I asked him, hey, do you think there's any chance that, you know, California could be a part of BBBA? Because I had no idea. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know who I was contacting because I was only a player back in Pennsylvania, and I didn't know anything. And he seemed very, very open and receptive, very excited about what I was doing. So, like, after I got off the phone call with him, I remember just sitting there and smiling. It was so cool. And then the other time is also a VBA thing, which is when I got elected as one of their trustees. So I'm actually a trustee for VBBA right now for their, I guess, their West region. So, I mean, that's kind of a big deal because apparently that meant that I was doing something right because somebody was recognizing that, and to be elected to a national organization was kind of a big deal for me. So I would say those are a couple of them for sure.
So you you started the whole thing out in the Central Valley, and after the first year, you took a step back. You say you're happy. You're happy with the current situation with the Central Valley. Taking a step back means you still play. You still umpire. You're still involved.
Yeah.
But you're just not a decision maker anymore. Is that right. Is that something you intend on getting back into in the future, or?
I don't know. I don't think that is something that I aspire to. I really, one thing that I learned while doing all this is I'm not a very good leader. I really, really like to do what somebody else tells me to do, and trying to delegate things just wasn't really my jam, you know? And I found myself sort of pigeonholing myself into doing a lot of things because I just didn't feel comfortable asking a bunch of other volunteers to do stuff for me. And so that's kind of like one of the things. But let's step back just a minute.
Sure.
You would use the word you founded or you created, and that's kind of true. It was sort of my brainchild, but I did not do Central Valley Vintage Baseball myself. There were quite a few people that came on to help in a very big way. So just a couple of quick shout outs to Batman, to Peach, to Crash, and now we have Hammer. He's the guy that's running the place now. I mean, and you know, we have this other guy named what do we call him now? I don't even know. I think we call him Meat Stick, or we call him Eye Candy. I don't even know, because he keeps changing his nickname. But these guys, there's absolutely no chance whatsoever that these teams would exist without their help. You know, so I could probably say with fair confidence that I thought everything up to begin with, but I will never, ever say that I started this thing on my own. So first of all, I just want to make that pretty clear. So shout out to all the Central Valley guys. And then the second part of that was, am I okay being not a decision maker? 100% absolutely. I'm very happy to have stepped back and been able to refocus my life a little bit because I love vintage baseball, but I love my wife and my daughter just a whole lot more. So it's been very important for me on a personal level to just, let somebody else do it. And they've been doing a great job. So I have no regrets whatsoever. And I think that they're doing a phenomenal job as they're moving forward.
So it worked out.
Very much. Absolutely. So big time kudos to the leadership out over there right now. I love what they've done with the Salama Club. And I think that they've established a relationship with Bay Area Vintage Baseball Crew. So what they're doing with them is also like amazing. I think that what they're planning on doing is playing one game against them in San Francisco per Central Valley Vintage Baseball team. So I think that each of the four teams are going to go out there at some point over the summertime and play against them. And the first one of them is actually on April 4th, and I'll be going out there and umpiring. It's going to be awesome.
And what rules are they playing by?
we're going to play 1864 rules, which is the best thing. Because, as I mentioned, those guys typically play 1886 rules, and they have, I guess, become interested in, I wasn't a part of the discussions, but for whatever reason, they want to play 1864 baseball against us. And I thought, nice. I am so excited that Curtis and everybody over at Central Valley Vintage Baseball Leadership has been able to put this together. I'm really excited about this, and it's going to be a big deal, I think, for moving the 1864 game up in a pretty big way out here.
Well, I think it absolutely will. I look forward to talking to some of those gentlemen in the southern part of California about what they do.
Absolutely. I can put you in touch with a couple of them.
I want to talk to everybody. Every single person.
I don't know all of them.
Ever.
I can hook you up with one or two.
Every person that's ever played vintage baseball or does.
Well, I think you have thousands. A good bit of, you know, that's like some good job security as a podcaster then. You're good.
Hey, have you gotten any injuries from playing?
Me? Two, but very minor. One of them, I kind of jammed up my finger. No big deal. You know, it's hardly even worth mentioning. But the other one was kind of bad. I was sliding into first, which just that statement is ridiculous. But it's baseball. I was sliding into first. I didn't know what the heck I was doing. It was one of my, you know, first, I don't know, maybe probably my first 10 games or something like that. And I ended up, I don't even know how I did it, honestly, but I ended up tearing my plantar fascia. So, like, you know, that little tendon thing down at the bottom of your foot.
Oh, yeah.
And that hurt something awful, man. That sidelined me for several weeks. And I still feel the effects of that, you know, even, you know, 5 years since then. But, yeah, those are the only two. Nothing major. You know, I haven't had any broken fingers. I don't have any wood to knock on, but no broken fingers, no dislocated anything. Hopefully it'll stay that way. But based on all of the other interviews that you've done and all of the people that I've played against and the discussions I've had, it doesn't seem likely that I'll be able to get out of all this without hurting myself at some point.
Oh, sure. Deal with it. We're men.
That's right. Absolutely.
All right. What we're going to do right now is we're going to go on to giving you the old pepper, something I've done in a couple episodes, and this is my third crack at it. So I've warned you about this ahead of time. I'm going to rapid fire about 20 questions at you, and I just want you to give the quick answers.
All right, I'll do the best I can.
Oh, I know that you will. Here we go. Name a famous quote.
Name a famous quote?
Yeah.
Yeah. I will go with George Washington's farewell. 'Tis well.
Oh, God, you are so smooth. What is your favorite baseball movie?
Ah, man, it's got to be Field of Dreams.
If you were stuck on one age for the rest of your life, what age would it be?
27. I was very fit then.
What's more important? Good defense or good offense?
For what? For baseball?
Anything.
For anything?
All encompassing.
Let's go with. I'm gonna kind of go back to Revolutionary War again, and I'm gonna go with defense because I feel like Washington was on defense most of those 8 years.
Name something you are afraid of.
Height.
What did your wife eat on your first date?
Jesus, that was so long ago. It was like, just, I don't know. It probably was some sort of a pasta dish. We'll go with that.
Okay. When you find yourself daydreaming, what is it usually about?
Are you supposed to remember what you're daydreaming about?
Yes.
Yeah. Honestly, I think it's my daughter. Yeah.
What was your first car?
I had a 1995 Pontiac sunburn with probably three quarters of the body and complete rust.
Wow. Did an REO Speedwagon shirt come with that?
I don't think so.
How many chickens does it take to kill an elephant?
Well, it depends on whether or not they're working on offense or defense.
Wow. What's your favorite cheese?
String cheese.
What was something you did fun once, but you'll never do it again?
More than once?
No, just once.
So you, I did not.
You
so,
did
oh,
it
just once.
Once
that I'll never do again?
That's right.
Let's see. What was it that I never would ever do again? I don't know. That was actually a toughie. Can I come back to that one?
Pass. What was your favorite cereal as a kid?
The favorite what? Cheerio?
Cereal.
Cereal. Oh. As a kid? Yeah, it's probably Fruit Loops.
What was your favorite video game ever?
As a kid or ever?
Ever.
NASCAR 2005 Chase for the Cup.
What is your least favorite mode of transportation?
Airplane. Absolutely. Freight of pipes, remember?
Oh, yeah. What is your favorite part of the human face?
The favorite part of the human face? Gotta be the eyes. There's so much to see.
If you could
in
have
them
a,
and through them.
If you could have a superpower, what would it be?
Superpower. I'd like to be able to teleport. You know why? Because I wouldn't have to fly.
Sure. Name a chore that you hate to do.
God, I can't stand doing laundry. Actually, I don't care about doing the laundry. I just don't like folding it and putting it away.
Name an actor you would like to play you in a movie.
Man. Let's see, would it have to be a young actor or an older actor when I get older and I warrant myself to have an actor portray me? I'm going to go with the older actor because I'm starting to pudge up just a little bit like Tom Hanks is doing, and I love Tom Hanks, so I'm going to go with him. He'll do a good job.
Name a serial killer.
A serial killer?
Yeah.
John Wayne Gacy? I think he's a serial killer.
Who's your favorite villain?
I guess Walter White.
Oh, that's a good one. And then we're going to circle back to something you did once for fun, but you'll never do it again.
And I thought about it now, kind of somehow. And I remember there was one time I was driving very fast down a country road, and I didn't realize how fast I was going. It turned out I was doing like 130. So I will never do that again. That's scary.
Wow, going 130, that wasn't in your first car. That I can tell you.
No, hell no. That car wouldn't go that fast. No way.
So I can tell by some of these questions, the answers, you're kind of a history nerd, aren't you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, you know, I lived in Southeast Pennsylvania, so, I mean, there's plenty of history to be had there. You know, I lived in the Brandywine Valley. That's where Lafayette was shot in the leg, you know, Marquis de Lafayette in the Revolutionary War. The Battle of Brandywine was right there. I lived in the hub of the Underground Railroad, one of the major stations right across the border to Pennsylvania. I mean, I just love history. There's so much interesting stuff to learn about, and who needs fiction? You know, there's plenty of great stories just in the history. It's fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. So, one day when we're together, we're going to talk about history because I want to pick your brain on that situation.
Okay.
That's going to bring this episode to an end. Hey, Matt, thanks for coming on and being a guest on the show. I appreciate it.
That was a great time. Thanks for having me.
Oh, no problem. You were a name that came up right away in my list. It didn't take me too long to get to you. Only halfway through the first season.
All right.
So, anything you want to plug coming up? You got coming up?
Yeah, just everybody have a look at the Central Valley Vintage Baseball website. Have a look at their schedule. And I would like to point out also that it is very nice out here right now, and it has been all winter long. So if there's anybody out there that wants to bring a team this way, you can reach out to me or you can reach out to Curtis Piatt, P-I-A-T-T. He's the guy that runs Central Valley Vintage Baseball. If anybody's interested in bringing a team out here to play during the wintertime, we have the climate to do it.
You sure do. All right, that's going to do it for this episode. You can catch Roller Around the Barrel on the Facebooks. We're on Stitcher. We're on a bunch of we're on Podbean mainly. And you can also check us out at strikewellgents.org. I want to say Semper Fi to my son, Ashton. And everyone be careful out there, and we'll catch you next time. Just a bit outside.